the podcast where the real world meets the digital world as we explore the intersection of spatial computing and AI. Let's welcome our host, Andrew Ballard. Over to you, AB.
Welcome to Spatial. This episode is a deep dive all on its own. This week we're covering the rather gnarly but important topic of how do you get started with spatial AI? That is great. It's an emerging technology. The field is changing so rapidly. If you're already on the leading edge, congratulations. The burning question of today is how do you get there? How do you get close? We'll probably start with a round table of how did we get close to, I won't say leading edge, close to watching the edge, but then a deeper dive really is how does someone fast follow? How do you catch up? Open question, who'd like to go first? I can see a lot of people with a lot of experience here in this chat. Violet, could you give us a bit of a brain dump of your experience of watching this field and then go around again for catching up? Go for it.
Sounds great. I kind of stumbled into this field because I started in architecture, which has a lot of 3D stuff. It has a lot of modeling and simulation, but then ended up getting really interested in the way we interact with physical spaces. So I wanted to get out of like the digital simulation world. I had been at Google at the on this product for generative design, and so that was all simulation based. But I was really interested in sensors and the tangible world and physical computing. So chased after that, really, creating a new class for that so that I could start to learn more about it. And so I guess my biggest advice for like making the jump into something like spatial AI is I think you need to find what you're really interested in and carve out that niche for yourself by just starting to learn more about it, work on the tools. Like for me, when I started getting into this, I don't think I had much upper hand other than the fact that I had been working in like the simulation space, but I didn't really understand sensors or how to merge the physical world really, other than like any experience I had from fabricating things in architecture. So I think the best way to ramp up is just to start playing with the tools. So for us, it's like spending a lot of time having ideas about specific projects. Oh, could we start to use something like OpenAI to have more natural interactions? Oh, let me play with this gesture library and see if I can combine that with speech. And so I think you have to like allow yourself a little bit of freedom to be a novice. There are so many people being novices, like trying to learn how these things behave. And we have to really just like poke and prod at the tools and see what talks to what and what that does and what emergent properties does it have. So I think you just kind of have to like chase what you want to do and get muddy.
Get muddy indeed. Helena, you're definitely possibly in that muddy field. You've been playing in the geospatial world. Not only have you been able to go ahead and do some deep research, but you also then take your clients through that kind of journey. How do you sort of get them pushed up that hill without, you know, dragging them up the hill? How do you do it politely?
So it's a bit interesting because I'm actually quite the opposite approach of what Violet's just outlined with, you know, playing with the tools and kind of taking that technology first approach is a bit kind of different to what, you know, my personal philosophy is always a problem first approach. So for me, it's less about the technology, it's less about the tools, it's more about what problem are we trying to solve. And that's always what's at the heart of the conversation I have with clients when they come to me and they say like, hey, I've got this really cool idea. And I got to say 9 out of 10 client conversations that I have these days are people or startups, like individuals, smaller companies or larger companies who are kind of pivoting or adding a sector who are going into AI. So I've only really had one conversation lately where it's been about branding that hasn't been somehow related to AI. So people are seeing the opportunities everywhere. You know, people from various sectors. So like we've, you know, AI in education, AI in street lighting, AI in, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I just like from this week alone, conversations I've had. And, you know, it's always really nice and easy to get hung up in all the cool stuff that you can do. But the way I tend to handle it is to pull it back and say, like, okay, I know there's so much cool stuff you can do and there's so much potential in there, but what problem are we addressing? What problem are we solving? Because otherwise we fall into this, you know, in the geospatial world, it's been described as like the geospatial product trap, where you create an amazing product, but no one really needs it or wants it. And I suppose some innovations come about that way, and it has its, you know, definitely has its, it has its playground. But when you want to make money with it, when you want to build a career off it, when you want to build a brand off it, then you need to be super clear what problem you're actually addressing. So that's where I start. So we really drill down into what's the need and how can you address the need and how can AI come in to help you address that need more efficiently. And most of these business ideas or kind of products are based around the AI component of then addressing a need more efficiently. And that's what we then drill down into and say, okay, what do we need to consider? You know, what are the hesitations in the audience? What's the objections we need to overcome? What is it that people are scared of? What are people's preconceptions where they think like, oh, an AI could never replace this or that certain thing, or, you know, being worried that it's going to take their job, or on the other hand, being like, wanting it to do too much. I've also had that conversation this week where someone said, like, then, you know, the AI people who he's gotten on board to help create his product idea, they want to integrate far too much AI stuff and actually completely take away from the experts who are also involved. And so it's really then about how do you have those conversations with the different stakeholders on the team to ensure a balance of, you know, kind of the human component, the AI component. What problem are you addressing? How can you make sure that AI is staying in its lane and the expert is staying in their lane and, you know, bringing it together to create something that's going to actually drive humanity forward? So does that even make sense? I don't know.
Oh, it does. I'm hearing the same theme, even though different ends of the stick, potentially. I'm hearing balance and awareness and play. And by the sound of it, knowledge breeds knowledge. Perhaps both those are in that same bucket. Mirek, for you, how have you sort of gone to getting to where you are now with background skills, but also how would you encourage someone to fast follow if they wanted to, yes, catch up, overtake? What are the sort of the tools and techniques that you found are the most useful to, you know, rapidly understand, dare I say, grok the spatial AI world?
Yeah, I'm still like, I'm in the process of what we're talking about right now. So I can talk in length about it. I don't know if anybody would find it interesting. But I agree with both Helena and Violet that you need to look for a problem, but also look at the tech and sort of try to merge these things together. My work is on the intersection of augmented reality and human-machine interaction and robotics. There's quite a lot in all these fields to sort of learn that you need to understand, or you need to have a buddy or a teammate who understands that kind of thing deeply. And so I started in AR before it even existed. You couldn't get HoloLens even. You know, it was this thing that's coming, you know, in next year or the year after. I still wanted to get into the field, so I just took whatever was available and I just hacked it and modified it. And I just stuck as long as I needed to have something I could work with. And it's a painful process. It's not fun. Most of it is not, you know, you don't see results immediately. It can take really long time to actually, you know, modify something or have a platform that you've created, especially when you're approaching it by knowing nothing and, you know, having to learn everything as you go. In AR or VR, that's no longer the case. You can just grab Oculus and you're golden. You can just, you know, get that for a few hundred bucks in Unity, and then you can start prototyping and you can, you know, learn from others and see what libraries are available. Your mileage may vary. It depends on what you're doing and whether the components are already out there. If they're not, you have to get your hands dirty, in any case. or you might end up with something that has been done hundreds of times already and nobody cares. You know, if you just take whatever is available and then mesh it with other things, you're most likely not creating anything unique. I think for that, you really need that deep technical knowledge to be able to actually, you know, both understand the system and be able to sort of imagine what you can do with that. In robotics, the learning curve is crazy steep. You have to have some general understanding of electronics and how these things work. If you want to get into that, get an Arduino. That's the fastest path to like get some really basic knowledge, and then you build it from there. If you want to be playing with these AI systems, I reckon, and I didn't get that far yet. I still have to sort of, you know, catch up on that. Everything is rules based in this industry. That's my understanding. And ROS is this, that stands for robotic operating system. It's essentially a messaging system. So you have multiple nodes running on multiple pieces of hardware talking to each other. One drives your motor, one reads your sensory data, and something else then meshes it together and does the decision making. If you want AI plugged into that, you'd better understand this environment really well. And that may take a long time, really. ROS in particular is like, after a week,
it's deep.
You kind of get the idea how it works, like, you know, the overall principles. But then 6 months later, you're kind of like still there and you kind of feel like you know what you're doing. But just be ready that it takes a lot of patience and a lot of determination to sort of understand these concepts, to be able to then innovate on them, because that, I assume, is what you want to do. You want to build something that isn't out there. And if you just take things that kind of exist and put them together, maybe it's not as unique as, you know, you'd like to. So my recommendation is just equip yourself with a lot of patience and just set out a time to learn new things, because you'll need that.
Yeah, I'm hearing a thread emerging. I'll wrap it up in a tick, but I'm definitely hearing a thread. I'll put that in the parking lot, put a pin in it, any other business metaphor you want. William, to you though, your journey and then, yeah, your sort of way forward. Can you sort of chart us a here to there kind of pathway?
Oh, my journey. It's been an interesting one. Perhaps I'll say serendipitous. I've been tinkering with electronics and writing code since I was probably 6 years old. And when I went to college and grad school, I wanted to do something that was simultaneously technical, but also creative and also tangible. And so that led me to architecture. And you quickly realize there isn't actually that much technical in it, at least when I was when I went to school. But we saw the emergence of that technology. And architecture is always a bit behind the curve on adopting particular types of technology, which wasn't the case in the early days of the what we know as the modern profession, say the late 19th century and other periods, where architects were actually inventing new means of drawing, new means of communicating and representing space, and translating that into the real world, things like perspective projection and descriptive geometry, things like that. And so, but I did not like the profession itself. I was more enamored with things like design techniques that were emerging from other fields and that were finally integrated into architecture in the early 2000s, things like evolutionary design. And so my thesis involved writing a genetic algorithm to optimize acoustic reflectors, things like that. And there was a small cohort of us with who really loved this idea of writing code to generate form and design buildings. And so how could you start with something that was relatively primitive or random and then evolve it into something meaningful? Then outside of school, after I graduated, I ended up as an academic for some time, and so taught structural engineering and also tried to incorporate some of these newer techniques emerging, like what we call parametric design. So tools that take a form and essentially extract the numbers out of it, and then you can play with the numbers and then see what that results in. Using things like finite element method to analyze structures that you might generate, and you kind of tweak the numbers again and you get a different shape, and then you analyze it again and iteratively do that. And so I'm sort of going back and forth between something related to space and something related to AI or technology in general. So I ended up at a friend's startup that was effectively a machine learning and data science startup, where we were building a platform for a unique programming language that would allow a data scientist to write small chunks of code, but execute them at scale on the cloud. Then I was a product lead at a company called Floored, the head of product there, where we engaged with VR. And so that was like marketing experiences in the browser for real estate brokers, where we had an Oculus and where we had an experience there. This is before my time, but they built an experience with the Oculus that would allow the largest development in North America at the time, which was the Hudson Yards in New York City. They allowed the developer to lease the retail space by having an Oculus headset and having them walk around the mall and essentially pick which retail slots that they wanted. So that was rather remarkable, I think, at the time. One of the products I worked on and helped to build was a generative floor layout product that also leveraged the 3D technology we had at the time. And then I went into cloud computing, and then I went into sort of sustainability tech. And now here I am again, recombining space and AI. Now where AI is actually, these like advanced capabilities of artificial intelligence are far more popular and far more accessible. Just 2 years ago, things like BERT and GPT-3 were kind of really niche developments, and you kind of had to be in the circle to know about them and really appreciate them. And now,
and you can run them yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Totally. And now that these large language models can demonstrate this kind of reasoning capability, I think it was just the right moment again to take my fascination with space and design and combine it with AI and just ask the question, like, can we do this? Can we do something meaningful? And what's the potential of it? And so the half of me that's the product manager from cloud computing and from real estate tech is saying, yeah, we need the right problem to solve. Don't just throw a chat on it. But then the researcher, designer, technologist side of me is like, okay, like, but we need to incubate this in some way and provide some wisdom so we can explore. And so I think finally, like the one piece of advice I would have is like, everyone needs a project that they're passionate about to lead them into something like this, which is really complex and really technically grounded, and but also has a lot of potential. When I was in architecture school, there was very little time you had payoff with the work you were doing. You would work on a design for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, only to be eviscerated in your jury. But with programming, every few minutes you could have a win. Something worked and it was magical, and like you could see it happening. And so that journey, I think, is really important when you're trying to deal with something new. It's like you have to enjoy the work itself, and that has to motivate you. And that payoff at the end of the big payoff at the end of like you sold to the client, you shipped the product or whatever is part of it. But you need the project so that when you get up in the morning, you really look forward to sitting down and struggling through the hard parts.
Yeah. I hear you big time. If I can summarize a couple of this thing, and we might wrap in five, is that spatial AI is definitely a niche field within the fields that we generally play in. Spatial computing is obviously 3D and has all the different complications of the 3D modeling world and environments and deeper, denser data, you know, in more dimensions, literally. So spatial computing versus regular computing, you know, data science is rough enough and a great learning curve. It can be tables, it can be 2D data, but by the time it gets to 3D and then time-based, well, 4D, whatever you wish, it makes it rougher. So that is a steeper learning curve, or you're combining fields there to even start with. The geospatial world, if it's 2D, it's great. There's a lot of learning and there's a, you know, it's its own field and has been for 100 years. But to go into third dimension, suddenly you're playing with 3D tiles and elevations and trying to do data science on, you know, slopes and falls and things like that. It does make it harder to go into a third dimension, but that's probably the defining factor that all of us can either visualize or contend with, or our brains are kind of set okay to it. I'd probably suggest that those who have played games since they were little kids probably are very familiar with navigating 3D worlds at pace. That's probably been a helpful tool rather than a hindrance. So there you go, parents, let your kids play games. The thing that I'm getting amongst all of us is that probably being self-aware is probably the number one thing to sort of get ahead the fastest. We've talked about playing and iterating. We're talking about, as a customer or as a person, trying to find ways to, how can I do things? And to honor Mr. Rumsfeld, who did the classic known unknowns quadrant thing, you don't know what you know. If you can't ask for things that you don't know about, so you've got to go in baby steps to ask questions, and then that leads to more questions. Your vocabulary gets larger as you go down the path, so just starting is probably the number one lesson we could probably say. I'm also hearing that having a buddy, having someone to bounce ideas off is pretty wild. Either your code gives you the feedback that it worked is good. That's a good buddy. Having a real buddy to push you along is fantastic. Having someone to bounce ideas off is quite brilliant. Mirik, I'm quite fascinated by a subtopic that we'll probably come back to is, are you your own customer, or do you see a need and then, you know, the build it and they will come? And trying to be your own customer, is that good enough in 2024?
I think you have to start somewhere. And William actually put it nicely. Serendipity is quite important in this process. So you're digging into something that you find interesting. Engineers like to engineer and, you know, understand things and tinker and then build stuff. But sometimes you cross a whole new field that you have no idea existed before you started. And it's going to take you ages to become an expert on that. So it helps to have somebody, find somebody who can help you with you know, a solid block of things to do that need to be done. Or you just need to teach yourself how to do it. And I tend to do it the later way. I like to understand things deeply. That takes a lot of time. So I start by, you know, usually the process is like, here's a crazy idea. I need some peer approval for that. Just tell me I'm not going crazy, because then I'm going to spend a year actually building that thing. So it helps to bounce ideas off people. Yeah. And sometimes you really hit a wall and you need to talk to people who've been there before, you know, in this particular field, and they'll help you with, you know,
yeah.
No, this is not how we do it. You take that and this is how you do it. You had it all backwards. So
yeah.
That sort of thing, because oftentimes you're stuck in your own head and, you know, digging in wrong direction, and it helps to talk to people. But also, the process leads to, like, in my case, I just build a product by just digging into ROS and robotics, and I discovered something that's really difficult to do. And I built a thing, tool for that I'm using myself. I'm going to be releasing that as an open source. And that's something I didn't plan for at all. It just happened because there's a robot behind me that I've been using. I bought that one. Learn about, you know, robotics and all this, but now I'm modifying it, and there's a bit of hardware I'm working on that our listeners definitely won't appreciate. This is a leg that I'm building for the robot myself that allows it to go up and down. And yeah, but this is where you need to get, because that robot is now too small and limiting for what I needed to do.
Yeah.
I need to do some physical modifications of that, and that takes you to a whole, you know, other.
Yeah.
Places, but it's a slight diversion. But serendipity is an interesting property of this process, and you're just digging in various different directions. Sometimes you come across something that ties all these things together. It's useful. It solves a problem. And you had no idea the problem was there when you started. So
yeah, I'm using the phrase self-aware in a positive sense. I'm not trying to be negative in the slightest. We probably all of us, and this is the probably one of my life lessons, is that it's good to know how you like to learn and don't try and fight that. If you need to be tactile or you need to talk it through or you need to read a lot, whichever way works for you is the way that works for you. If a way doesn't work for you, try a different way and that may work for you better. On the practical sense, we're going to, in the next few days, we're going to leave a link and a deep blog article of 101 resources for getting started in this field. But we might leave you today with this one's a four-way Venn diagram. I've seen a three-way Venn diagram. William Violet, can we all have help with the, how do you pronounce it? Ikigai? No? Yes? Kind of. It's the classic Venn diagram, which you'll see in meme format on everywhere. But it's basically a Venn diagram of, yes, three or four. Things that you love, things that you're good at, things that pay well, and things that I guess the world needs is the new addition to the Venn diagram. And there's no peril wherever you want to sit with your passion, your playing, your learning. But some of those places that you sit are great, and that's an open source project or a weekend project. Others are, this is where you want to head to. So for me, being self-aware of, I can sit here, but that's a weekender project. This is a throwaway. But these ones here over in this hand-wavy area, that's where I kind of want to be. And if you can ever find things that pay well, you love, you know, the old adage of you'll never work a day in your life. That's the hope for us all. We might leave it there, everyone. We'll catch you next time on Spatial, where we'll come to you with news of the week. Then on a separate episode, we'll have the next topic of the week. Cheers all. Thanks for your time. Bye.
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 If you'd like more news and insights about Spatial AI, or have a story or interesting topic you'd like us to cover, reach out to us. Better yet, come and join the community at Spatial. All the links are in the show notes.